This is Odette Ogier for Cortez Currents on CKTZ 89.5 FM. This work is funded through the Local Journalism Initiative through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. This story is about the early days of Watershed Sentinel, an award-winning environmental magazine that was born on Cortez Island, founded by Dolores Broughton and her partner in life and work, Don Malcolm. Working side by side, their relationship over years, over decades, runs right along parallel to the growth of Watershed Sentinel. This story is also about saying goodbye to loved ones.
Dolores Broughton, and I lived on Cortez for about 20, 22 years or so, and it was some of the best time of my life, I have to say, even though it was occasionally stressful. And I edit and have edited for a long time now the Watershed Sentinel environmental magazine. That, here's a commercial plug, people can get a copy along with their membership in Friends of Cortez Island, or they can subscribe separately. Yeah, end of commercial. Well, the very seed of Watershed Sentinel starts with Macmillan Lodell, the logging company, and we had moved to Cortez about 4 years before, and finally got the roof on the house and that kind of thing. And so I was sort of wanting to become more engaged in the community. And the Cortez Island Forest Committee held a reorganization meeting where they were looking to get back on their feet. You know how organizations come and go. Well, this one was needed again because Macmillan Lodell was starting to do some pretty active logging on the island. And so I went to the meeting, and Bruce Ellingson nominated me to be on the publicity part of that committee. So I started doing posters about how the forest meant more to people than just the logging jobs, that there was, you know, there were several sawmills, there were people selling salal, there were mushroom pickers, and of course the tourism, and the forest was an important thing to people in many different ways. If you started publishing anything in those days, you got flooded with environmental stuff from all over the province. And West Coast Environmental Law was sending out stuff about pulp mill pollution. And there was all kinds of other issues connected to a simple logging issue. So eventually, and I was publishing all this stuff about how forests function and how you can do selective cutting instead of clear cutting and all that kind of information, but I was feeling a bit constrained by only talking about forestry. So I said to Don, you know, we really need a magazine. And we spent Christmas holidays thinking about it, because I knew a little bit about publishing and I knew it was going to be hard. So we spent a long time thinking it over and trying to come up with a name. And it was Don who came up with the name Watershed Sentinel, which I think is really so appropriate. And we started publishing. And we started publishing as a publication from Friends of Cortez Island until Revenue Canada said, publishing the news is not a charitable activity. So I bought the magazine from Friends of Cortez for $1. And we just kept on publishing. And some of the local places, Hollyhock and the St. store at Whaletown advertised. And then suddenly a few people from off-island started subscribing. I wasn't even advertising subscriptions. And people like Merv Wilkinson from Wildwood, the ecoforestry. Well, it was his land, but he turned it into an ecoforestry demonstration. Merv subscribed, and Ruth Masters subscribed from here in Comox Valley. And so all of a sudden we were starting to have advertisers and subscribers, and we're still giving it away for free everywhere, but mostly on the island. But eventually that got to be too much, and we went to a printer in, I think, Ladysmith, and then later in Victoria. And then you had to print 1,000 copies to get on the web press, which was much, much cheaper than photocopying. And it just kept on going like that. And we're giving away most of the copies, but some people were subscribing. And it was a huge challenge to transition from being a free magazine to being a paid subscription one. We're still working on it, but we now have many more paid subscriptions than we give away, free ones, so I guess that's success. Eventually, we turned Watershed Sentinel into a nonprofit society, because I wasn't making any money anyway, so, I mean, there was no question. It was not a problem. And we just kept going and kept going, and it became what it is now, eventually. It just took a long time and a lot of volunteers. So that's the magazine. And Don wrote this little piece, might print it in the next issue, actually, about how we all live in a watershed and we all have to be guardians of that watershed. And so that's been our... and I don't know, like motto or I don't know what that word is, but anyway, that's been what's been behind it all along.
You're working side by side, you're running the side of your home. Relationship over years, over decades, you know, runs right along parallel to the growth of Watershed Sentinel 2. Maybe you'd like to share a little bit maybe about your story of your relationship.
Well, I don't think it would have worked just as running a magazine, but we also had the garden, and we sold vegetables from a little roadside stand, and we didn't make much money, but we made enough money to pay for a holiday every fall, and every fall we'd go to Ontario to see his family. To him, there was nothing else to do on the summer holiday. And I'm like, well, you know, there's a gazillion other places in the world to go on a holiday than Ontario. But, oh, no, we had to go back to the sod, he called it, the old sod. And he had a large family back there, brothers and sisters. So that's what we did. And I think it was partly, it was probably, well, to me, it was working together on the land that was the glue. Because I remember being out there in the garden, just sweat pouring off me, thinking, this is what people are supposed to do, work together on the land. This is the right way to live. And I guess the other thing that was kind of non-traditional was, yeah, we spent all of our time together, except when we were doing other jobs, because we had to do other jobs to pay the groceries. But most of the time we spent together, so that was a little unusual, I think. And I hadn't realized that until recent, well, until he went into the care home. I hadn't realized how I was so used to, we were just always together. Yeah, we just, it was a little different that way, I think, in that we were partners as activists and partners as publishers and partners in the garden, and it wasn't always it wasn't always perfect. Let's put it that way. And I'm pretty sure the neighbors heard us shouting from time to time, or maybe yelling would be a better description. But we found that we would argue over something, whatever it was, whether it was his piece in the magazine or, we could argue over almost anything. And then we'd have this huge fight, and then we'd make up, and every time we did, we were a little bit closer to each other because we understood the other a little bit more. And I think that was the secret, really, for such a long relationship, is that we just stuck with it, mostly because, I'm going to say, because he can't talk for himself now, I'm going to say, we mostly stuck with it because Don wouldn't go away. But it was what made it really worthwhile. Because after a while, you didn't fight so much. You just sort of understood each other's points of view, even if you didn't agree with them. He was in the care home for a little over 6 years. Yeah, maybe 6.5 years, which is a very long survival for the dementia. He had dementia. And, that was tough. But that was part of why we had to move off Cortez. There are two reasons. One was because Don was very sick by then. He kept losing his wallet. He'd go over to Squirrel Cove to get his favorite ice cream because they carried it there. And he'd go over to Squirrel Cove and get his ice cream. And then I would get a phone call from the store. It'd be Joanne or someone saying, Dolores, I've got Don's wallet here. Because he'd lose it out of his pocket because he was bending over the freezer to get the ice cream. And so she'd send it back with the neighbor. You know, so-and-so's here, he's coming out your way, and someone would bring the bullet back. But eventually it wasn't just things like that, and I became really aware of how, at first I thought, staying on Cortez is the best thing we could do, because the community would know he was sick, and they would help look after him as much as possible. But then I realized he was just as likely to go get lost in the bush. And we did do that once back at his old farm in Ontario. Don's like, oh, of course I know Rob's pasture. And we're wandering around and wandering around, and nothing looks familiar. Of course, everything had grown up over the years, too. And finally, somebody had to come and find us. And I realized that could happen so easily on Cortez. There's so much wild bush there. And the other reason was that I couldn't get internet. And it reached a point with the magazine that internet was essential. Mm-hmm. At first, we had an apartment in Comox for the winters, mostly. Well, we kept it all year, but we only stayed there in the winters. And I used to say I could take the magazine on a disc and drive it from the Cortez Ferry, the Quadra Ferry, drive down to Comox and send it by the internet in Comox faster than I could send it to the printer by dial-up from Cortez. I think the dementia really hit in his early 70s. That's when he started making mistakes. He used to cut boards down to the 16th of an inch, which is really totally irritating because boards swell and then it doesn't fit, blah, blah. But he always insisted on these precision cuts. And he started cutting boards a couple of inches short over and over again. And it got to the point where whenever I saw him dragging out the saw, I'd drop whatever I was doing and come running to help. Because we couldn't afford to waste all that lumber. And that was the first sign that I really noticed. And he had a couple of mini strokes. He had one at a dance at Gorge Hall. That was really, and I didn't understand, I didn't know what it all was at the time. I knew nothing about this stuff. And he went to the dance alone, and I stayed home. And it was only like, well, a kilometer from our house, maybe. So anyway, then he came in early, and he said, "Hello, where am I?" And he totally lost all memory of the whole day. It was gone. And his arm wasn't working right, which of course was a dead giveaway, but I didn't know enough about anything at the time to really recognize what was happening. So it just went on like that, slowly, slowly, gradually, gradually. And so we moved. It was a heartbreaker for me because I didn't want to leave, but we sort of had to in some ways, and Don really wanted to, and I felt I owed it to him. In a way, he'd done things I wanted to do all our lives together, so it really was his turn. So, we left. It turned out to be okay. We knew people in the Comox Valley already because of our work at the magazine and things. So it wasn't like just moving into a strange place. And there's a lot of Cortez people here too. Mm-hmm. So that worked out okay in the end. But it was hard for a while. Mm-hmm. With him sick and he hurt his back too. On top of that, he had two slip discs or whatever. Mm-hmm. Distrated discs or something. Horrible pain. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty bad times. Mm-hmm. And then he got better, but his brain never got better. And eventually he couldn't be left alone anymore because he would just go out and get lost or turn the stove on, something like that. So anyway, familiar story for people who caregive people with dementia. From that point on, and in the Comox Valley, there were caregiver support groups I could go to and things. So that was good. And I was able to find more people to help with the magazine. So that was good. It's so ironic, though, because in the end, like the people who work for the Watershed Sentinel, half of them are Cortez, were from Cortez, and half of them are from here. It's a real hybrid mix of people.
I'm a little bit surprised when you say that Don wanted to go. I think I was preparing to ask the opposite question.
No, he really wanted to go. He actually wanted his ideal would be to move back to Ontario, to this little farm that he grew up on. And that, of course, got worse and worse as he got sicker. The only safe place he could think of was back home. And he hated the fairies. Oh, he hated the fairies. Didn't mind the power outages, but the fairy... and he was really, really irritating. He wouldn't call Cortez or Vancouver Island part of Canada. He'd say, what do you want to do, Don? He'd say, I want to go to Canada. I would get so mad.
It's interesting. I really liked how you were describing how a relationship grows and changes over time. And closer and closer to understanding each other as you grow together. And then how did that feel as his dementia increased? Did it feel like you were growing farther apart?
Oh, what a good question. Yeah, that was, well, what happened, at first the dementia, well, in about the middle stage, the dementia was very, very difficult, and he was paranoid, and he had delusions. It was downright scary. I mean, I was afraid, because he would wake up in the middle of the night and think someone was prowling in the house, and I'd be afraid to move in case he thought it was me, right, and he'd clobber me. So there was a lot of that in the middle time, but over in between those episodes, and especially over time, it was almost like we got stripped down. He used to laugh and say, Don just won every argument we ever had, because there's no point arguing with someone with dementia, right? You cannot win. But at the same time, you give up on that arguing stuff. You give up on the ego. You give up on who's right or wrong. You give up on what should happen today. You just give up on all of those sort of front-end facades, almost. And it was almost like we got closer and closer and closer as he got sicker. We went through a lot of turmoil with the care home that Don was in. It is one of the private care homes and part of a chain, and there's a whole bunch of organizing that happened around that with some other women, mostly whose husbands were in the same dementia wing as Don was. And we actually still have an organization called Crying Out Loud for Quality Residential Dementia Care, because we saw horror stories in there. But we organized and all of that. And Don at that point was still enjoying his life in his own way. Like, he said to me once, he said, "It's okay, I don't mind it here. I will stay here so long as you come to visit every day." And I did come about every second day, you know. And so as long as he was up and dancing and having music and things, he found a new role for himself in that life. I remember walking down the halls with him once, and he was going, "Hi, Don," you know, the cleaners and the other care aides, and everyone was going, "Hi, Don, how are you, Don?" And Don said to me, he was so proud, he said, "They know my name. They call me the dancer." And so he had this new role, new persona, that he was very proud of. And then about, I guess it was about March, he stopped getting up. Like he stopped walking, and he stopped dancing. And then in a couple more months, he stopped being able to eat. Like he could eat. He had a great appetite, but he couldn't feed himself anymore. So he became very severely disabled. And eventually, I was just at the point where I was thinking, oh no, I don't want him to live like this for years and years, you know. Because he wasn't having a good time anymore. He wasn't he was always cracking jokes and dancing and stuff, and he wasn't doing that. And then about a month ago, he had a really severe stroke. It was like it knocked out his ability to swallow or anything else. It was like the end. Except he was so strong, and he didn't. They kept him, you know, comfortable with morphine and stuff, but he wasn't letting go. And by then, it was time for him to pass. And I remembered how we had gone to Walking with Our Sisters, which was a moccasin display for the missing and murdered women. And already had severe dementia then. It was only about 7 years ago, maybe, but he wasn't in care yet, obviously. And we went and did the cedar brushing, and he was very affected by it. And I remembered that, and I asked for cedar brushing for him in the community, you know, I just asked on Facebook, actually, and the community did pull together, and they contacted the Healing Society in Cowichan, I think they are, and they said, phone us, and I did, and I explained. I guess a missing piece of that is that Don was Métis. They hadn't known it for many years. They buried it, which I think is pretty common. His mother would have died, so she would rather die than lose her kids. So they forgot that there was any Indigenous blood in their family for a long time, which was a bit of a shock to some of the members of the family when they discovered it. But Don was very proud of being Métis. And so this society got in touch with me, and they found a man up in Campbell River who came that afternoon. It was like, it only took like 3 hours. It was amazing. And he came, and he came with eagle feathers and cedar. And he rushed on. And he talked to him. He said, you know, I'm here, and I'm here to help you go. And he did all of that. And when he put the eagle, I don't know if it was wing or feather, but anyway, put it up sort of across his heart and then up over his face. And Don's eyelids went up in surprise. And then his whole face relaxed. And then James finished that ceremony and said, you know, Don would go out on the eagle up to the Creator, and that the eagle would eventually come down and take all the pain and trouble with him back down to earth. And then he brushed me and said, sister, it's time to put your burdens down. And it was the most amazing, wonderful thing that's happened to me probably ever. Well, except maybe meeting Don in the first place. But anyway, it was a great blessing.
Wow, that is so beautiful, Dolores.
I know. So many things came together. And then, afterwards, James was talking to my friend who stayed with me, who was one of the management team at the care home, and they talked, and she said, well, we're going to put an Indigenous healing circle in the new village that we're building, the new care home we're building, and he was really happy about that. And then they talked some more, and it turned out, he said, you know, I can give workshops to teach your staff how to do this. And she said, that would be wonderful. And so another whole good is coming out of all that other good, you know. It's beautiful.
That is the only word for it. It's very beautiful.
I felt so incredibly privileged. So lucky. So blessed. Not just by the ceremony and all of that, but by the way the whole community helped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for giving me space to talk about it. It's a little painful, but it's also very good.